All right.
We are back, and we are in the middle of something, actually. Usually, we start the podcast. We are by ourselves. We got nothing but the rundown in front of us, and we got ourselves ready to talk. Not this week. Today, we've been streaming Fight Night Champion. And, Leo, why don't you tell them about the setup?
Well, right now, we got two of our regular participants two of our participants are Tweed. He's done a couple of beats on the podcast, and Ryan. I think these are the two youngest guys in the chat room, and they're both like 19 20, I think.
Yeah, and Ryan, who talks a lot of trash, got himself a PlayStation. And how we got to set this up is we basically put our phones, we streamed Twitch live on our phones, and then we pointed at a TV, and then we streamed.
So bad.
So it's a pretty bad quality.
Muhammad versus, is that Foreman?
No, he's Holyfield.
Holyfield.
You could barely tell. Yeah. You could barely tell who it is. That's how bad it is.
I couldn't tell if it was old man Foreman or what. But yeah, these guys are going at it on Fight Night Champion. If you want to catch these hands, you got to send in your name.
Yeah, we'll stream it. I took a loss today. I got a little too cute playing as Pranav. Right? Hey man, shut up!
You didn't mute it yet?
No, I guess I should press mute. So we got some news to talk about. We got some fights. We had a big fight. I guess it's the elephant in the room. Leo, diehard Miguel Cotto fan.
The biggest.
Didn't go home happy, did you?
No, not at all. Not everyone, as Saddam Ali put it in the press conference, in the post-fight presser, as he was standing in front of the media, he said, "None of you believed in me, but it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, I believed in myself. Maybe now you'll put some faith in me."
Ooh, is that supposed to hurt?
I don't know if it's supposed to hurt, but it's kind of one of those gotchas. Like, he knew that everyone was kind of. It didn't really matter who the opponent was, so to speak, when we found out that, like, Mikey Garcia and Errol Spence, when those fights didn't come through, we knew it was kind of going to be a less than stellar opponent. So when it ended up as Saddam Ali, like, the last time we saw him out was against Jesse Vargas. So everyone kind of took it for granted that Miguel Cotto was going to go out on a high note. It was at a new weight for Ali. He got stopped by not exactly a power puncher at 47. And Cotto looked, by all accounts, he looked awesome against Common Guy. So what?
Wait a second. Now I got to stop you. Because
hey,
you're smoking rock.
Hey, I didn't watch it. I caught the highlights. That was it. So that's why I said by all accounts.
So you're just going to imply to everybody on live, not live recording, that you watch Mayweather McGregor over Cotto Kamigai?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not implying it. I'm saying it. I did.
And you never went back to watch the legend that HBO would lead you to believe, the legend Miguel Cotto, who's been in fight of the years. He always gets back. He always comes back and gets his heat back or whatever. You're implying that you didn't watch that.
I caught the highlights.
Okay. Well, I don't know how you were impressed, because unless they only showed Cotto's highlights, because Kamigai landed on him a lot.
Yeah, so did Ali.
Well, not only did Ali land on him a lot, Ali, you know, in my opinion, hurt him.
Oh, yeah, he definitely buzzed him a couple times.
To the point that here's the thing we got to talk about is how much credit do we want to give Ali? Because Cotto tore his bicep, and it was visibly disformed, or
yeah, it looked bad.
Deformed, I guess, is what I mean to say. You could tell there's something wrong with it after the fight. He's undergone surgery for it. How much credit do we want to give Ali for beating Cotto? I mean, essentially, he beat a guy who was one-armed.
I'll give Ali the same amount of credit that Cotto gave him, and that was once the fight was over. I'm not going to take anything away from him. Ali won the fight. Yeah, I was injured, but he won the fight.
Okay, but listen. Here's something that is a little ridiculous. So Max Kellerman says, like, you've never made excuses and you're not making excuses now, except that he did say my arm is my bicep, something's wrong with it. But he came out with like a full on FBI investigation about the hand wraps. So is that not an excuse? And it's appropriate that Cotto would not come up with an excuse because I don't remember Sergio Martinez saying anything about his knees not working, even though we could tell there was something wrong with his knees. Cotto drops him 5, 7, 9 times. He got full credit for that from a lot of people for beating Martinez.
Yeah, from some.
And so I definitely do think that Cotto was coming on in the fight. I think that he was figuring Ali out, and I don't give Ali full credit. I think Ali does not rate anywhere close to the top 5 at 154. But let me ask you this. Did Cotto?
Holyfield just put Ali down.
Yeah, that was a nice little counter right there. Do you rate Ali in the top 5 at 154 pounds?
Top 5? No.
You got Jermell Charlo. You've got Arizlan Di Lara. You got Jarrett Hurd. You've got Erickson Lubin, who's still there. I don't think you can count him out. You've got Maciej Sulecki, who's come down in weight and has been very good almost all of his career, but has gotten no opportunities to really showcase it on a big stage. 154 is a division that it's a tough division to be good at right now.
Yeah, we often refer to it as the murderer's row, and for good reason. I wouldn't even rate Ali above like Julian Williams.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, Trout schooled Cotto. Like,
yeah, that was a few years ago.
But let me ask you this. Does the Trout that we last saw against Jarrett Hurd, does he beat Miguel Cotto of today? I think he does.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to pile on him, by the way.
No, this isn't kicking him while he's down. Absolutely not.
If anything, it's more to say, like, you know, can you think of many other fighters who've done more with less? I guess you could say, you know, Cotto's...
he's a small 54.
Cotto hasn't been big in a division since maybe he was at 140, because at welterweight, it seemed like that was his limit, where he was basically the same size as everyone else. And you saw when he fought Pacquiao, he wasn't too much bigger.
Wasn't Pacquiao catchweight?
It was at 144, but even at 144, you know, he didn't look much bigger.
Yeah, still technically welterweight.
When he fought Floyd, even though they fought at 154 or whatever, I can't even remember. He wasn't that big.
Neither of them were full 54s.
So Cotto's done a lot in his career with very little, I think. He's got skills, no doubt, and he's definitely got a Hall of Fame career. But Cotto's done a lot in his career. What do you think now Ali does next? It seems like the most logical move for Ali is the cash out move.
Yeah. There was immediately at the post fight, Oscar was saying the plan is to get Ali back into the ring as soon as quarter one of next year. So expect to see him back soon. I'm not really too sure who Golden Boy has in the stable. If they're going to keep him at 54, I'm not really sure who they put him up against if they want to keep it in-house. Otherwise, the prospects are pretty slim. I don't know. If you reach across the pond, maybe you talk to like a Liam Smith type situation, something that's kind of winnable.
I don't know that they go that route, Liam Smith.
I don't either.
I think Liam Smith, he's a bigger guy. I think if the plan should be Kell Brook. He wants to move to 154. That's what they said the intention is. So true. Why not go for Brook? That's going to bring a lot more money.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Do you see what's happening here? Tweed is taking the camera off of the video game, and now he's giving us a tour of his weed farm.
Yikes.
This guy's growing weed in his room. Okay. Moving on to Ray Vargas.
He's in a legal state, for all disclaimers.
Okay, well, in case the FBI is listening to us right now, which I'm sure they are. Ray Vargas, was that the first time you'd seen him fight?
That was the first time I saw him fight, and he did not make a good impression.
Yeah, I was wondering, what's your impression of somebody who's seeing him fight for the first time?
Oh, okay, so seeing him for the first time, like when he came into the ring, The size disparity was obvious. Like the guy's like 5'10", 5'11", and he's fighting at 122.
And so, HBO tried to make the point that this is the biggest super bantamweight they've ever seen, forgetting that Donaire fought a guy just like this in Jeffrey Matabula a long time ago. But go on.
Who was that that Japanese guy that Rigondeaux fought? He was
Hisashi Amagasa.
Right. Everyone called him the Japanese vampire or whatever. But yeah, he was also pretty tall. Anyway, Vargas, he was really tall, and Oscar Negrete, we were joking in the chat, and like he looked like a little baby compared to him. He was so much smaller. It looked like it was supposed to be just an easy beat 'em up for Vargas, like a showcase situation. And definitely didn't turn out that way for him.
Do you think that Negrete could beat somebody, and let's say that he fights back at his natural 115 or even 118, can he beat anybody in the top five there?
118 is one of the few divisions I'm not too versed on. Let me look at the top 10 here.
Neri, could he beat?
Neri, no.
Yamanaka? McDonald?
Yamanaka, you might argue, is damaged goods.
Laborio Solis, he's not beating McDonald. McDonald's moving up, and he doesn't beat McDonald.
Here's the thing, though, is that McDonald, in his first outing with Solis, you could actually make a good comparison between Solis and Negrete. And Solis got in there, and he got rough with McDonald, who's also a really big guy for his weight. I think he's also 5'10 and fights at 118. I think Negrete could get in there and make it tough.
Yeah, but I don't see him beating anybody at
Burnett, nobody of note. Tete, Narvaez. Nah.
Tete would carve him up and knock him out. But why are we wasting time on Negrete?
Yeah.
He was a domestic fighter coming into this. And the question is Ray Vargas still a domestic fighter? I mean, I know that they beefed up his skills like a ton in the broadcast. He did win a wide decision. But you get the sense that, first of all, Ray Vargas is only 5'7.5".
Is he?
That's what his BoxRec says.
Yikes, I thought he was like 5'10".
That's what it said. I think it said on the broadcast that he was 5'10". So
that's what the broadcast crew was saying. So I was thinking, like, even if this is too much for him, then he moves up to 26 and no issues, really. Just puts on a little bit of muscle mass and there you go.
I mean, he can move up to 126 and get beat by, you know, the murderers right there.
Everybody?
I mean, here's the thing. It feels like Ray Vargas is a not-so-good version of Leo Santa Cruz. I mean, remember, Leo Santa Cruz started light, too.
Very good comparison. Very good comparison. A poor man's Santa Cruz.
I mean, he does a lot of, like, Vargas, you can see he's got the potential, but Vargas has been in position to fight for a title for a long time. And I figured that when PBC came along, he would be one of the guys that they brought in to basically create as a new star, because you see he's a Mexican fighter trained by Nacho Beristain. All the foundational things that you want are there. And it never happened. And he had this opportunity at a title, and Nacho said no. Nacho knew he wasn't ready, and that was like a red flag to me, because up to that point, I just trusted Nacho, and you know he had only been in prospect fights, so obviously he looked good every single time out. And when Nacho said no, I went back to look at him like, okay, well, maybe I'm missing something, you know? It could be very easy that I'm missing something here. So, and in this fight, you can kind of see it, like, it was really obvious in his last fight, but you can see now, like, he doesn't have A or B stuff anywhere. Well, he might have some B stuff, like, his stamina was pretty decent. He's got good timing, but, like, this is going to sound bad, but it seems like he doesn't have, like, world elite level skills anywhere.
Really, the only reason he would look good, like you said, his output was good, his stamina was good, his punch placement was good, and his shot selection was good too. But 22 is pretty thin, so it's either be a big fish in a little pond or move up to 26 and I don't like the word, but get exposed as being that B-side, B-level guy.
Do you think he... Well, first of all, he has no power, but do you think he beats Rigondo?
He has the makings of what troubles Rigondo. He definitely does. The height, the reach, those are the kinds of things that bother him. But without
the
power...
That he's giving up this weekend. Okay, cool.
But all the things that... He doesn't have the power to keep... I don't think he has the power to keep... To gain Rigondo's respect.
No, and I think Rigondo...
Rigondo can hurt him. He can crack. For whatever faults, he's boring. We get it. You know, insomnia medication, substitute joke. We all know him. But Rigondo can crack. He's got one punch power. He can put dudes out with one hit. And Ray Vargas does not have the power to keep Rigondo off of him.
I mean, I think Vargas... the good thing at this division is a lot of the guys are small. You know, you have Jesse Magdaleno. The guy's 5'4".
Yeah, he's a little guy.
You have Marlon Topalos, 5'4". And Diego De La Hoya.
I was wondering if you were going to mention him.
He's 5'6", but, you know, he's still a smaller guy, and he's going to give something up. I mean,
I think Vargas might be a fun fight.
It would, and I think Diego can give him a hell of a fight because Diego's going to beat him to the punch. And finally, we're going to get...
He can make it scrappy, too, like Negrete did.
I'd like to see him fight Tomoki Kameda. I think that's a good fight, and it'll gauge how he does against somebody closer to his size. And Kameda fights in a very similar fashion, although he's not as refined. So
this is a Mexicanito. I remember him being mentioned here.
Former world champion.
Two losses to McDonald.
Well, you know, McDonald at the time was like in the top 10 pound for pound, possibly top 5 if you're British. But that is a story for another day. So there was another fight early in the day. Did you catch it, the Anthony Yigit fight?
I couldn't find a way to watch it. I would have liked to, just I know he hangs out on the boxing forums, and so like that puts him, gives him some cred to me.
Yeah, he does hang out in boxing forums. He Googles his name, and then he sends nudes to whoever. I'm kidding. he did good. He did good. I watched the fight. I didn't watch it that closely, but he definitely won the fight. He overcame what was... you know, pressure that seemed like it was bothering him early on, but over time class showed, and you get easily won. I think he's getting close to challenging for a world title. That could be coming up soon.
That was going to be my first question was, is he still at the, he's the European champion right now. Is he, and he's actually pretty high in the IBC. Is he going to be moving up anytime soon to challenge for like those intercontinental type of titles?
I think possibly that's what would be next. There's talk that, and they were really pushing for a Josh Taylor fight, because Taylor was ringside. They had him interview, and it seemed like this is why Yigit got the showcase on Channel 5 in the UK to build up this Josh Taylor fight. But Yigit threw a wrench in everything, and after the fight said, "I want to move to lightweight." I think
he fought at 140, and then he moved down.
Yeah, he wants to move down to lightweight.
Well, I mean, 140 right now, it's a pretty open landscape, and there's a lot of guys jockeying for position. But 135, it's a little bit more open. There's a couple of good names, but other than that, like the middle ground that's wide open. And I'm pretty sure that the top guys will be moving up soon to 140.
Maybe he wants a fight with Mikey Garcia. I don't know.
Well, you can get that at 135 or 140. You can get that wherever you want it.
Yeah, so that will that will be the end of our discussion on the domestic scene. And this was, you know, there wasn't too much boxing this week as far as watching. So we're going to talk about the news now. And yes, I know the previews. We do know that Lomachenko and Rigondo, the purest fight that has ever been fought in a boxing ring, is this week. We'll get to that. But first, there's some news that we got to get to. You know, it's getting harder and harder to find the news over, because you know what I usually do is I just go to the subreddit Hit Top, from the last week, and then I write down all the news that was basically posted. But there's nothing but GIFs. It's like 100 and something GIFs.
I got a few pieces. Some of it's rumor mill, though.
All right, well, let's hear your rumor mill. People like rumors. And
Jared
innuendo.
Hurd posted on Instagram with one of those question marks that Erislan Di Lera would be moving to 160.
What?
Yeah.
For what?
Don't know, but he was going to be moving up to 160, and Hurd had, like, he posted a picture of himself looking at his phone, and the caption was, Lera moving to 160.
But where did he get that? Is that just what he hears? Is that, like, actually sourced?
I spent a little bit of today looking for something on that, and I didn't find anything.
So maybe... So that could be a couple of things. It could be that he is indeed moving to 160. It could also be that Lara is going in another direction, and maybe they were negotiating a Hurd Lara fight, or they were trying to see if that would work, and that's not what's going to work out. Maybe Canelo wants her Lara rematch. I'm not sure. But that I would think that if Lara is basically no longer, or Hurd's not in the running for a Lara fight, my thinking is that Charlo's getting the Lara fight.
Well, Charlo commented on the picture saying, yeah, don't worry about him. You got me right here.
Really?
Yeah.
What would Lara be doing at 160? I mean, if we look at who's with PBC at 160, I can't... No, he's not gonna. It's not going to be Charlo because they're trained by the same guy.
Yeah.
It's Derevianchenko, like Centeno, but Charlo's rumored to get the Centeno fight.
I think Andy Lee, he's on the... I know he works with DiBella.
We don't need to see Andy Lee in the ring fighting Erislan Di Lara.
Willie Monroe.
That. Yeah, I can't see what Lara... Like, if Lara fought Willie Monroe, you should stop listening or stop watching his fights if you haven't already. That's just unacceptable.
Or Danny Jacobs. Demetrius Andrade.
HBO. Demetrius Andrade turned down the Derevianchenko fight. Maybe he's
And he turned down the Lara fight, too. At 54, anyway.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
That's why we got Terrell Geisha, whatever his name was.
Yep. Okay, so maybe Lara's going to fight. Maybe he's going to make that fight. Interesting. What else you got?
Ortiz, he's back in action on Friday.
He is, and does anybody care? That's the question.
No, not at all.
Because, look, he tests positive. And they're like, oh, actually, you're all right. We're sorry.
What's weird?
But we're still going to find you.
What's weird about that is he tested positive for heart pressure medication, blood pressure. Yeah, mixing my words up. Is blood pressure medication, and that like it was legit. It's legitimate blood pressure medication. What is this dude doing fighting in professional boxing with high blood pressure?
Exactly.
So WBC now has him on a pretty tight leash that. You're going to be under the supervision of one of our physicians as well, because if you have high blood pressure, that raises some question marks what you're doing as a professional boxer at like the top upper echelons of the sport.
But it doesn't raise enough question marks to say maybe you shouldn't be boxing because you have this condition where you might pop some blood vessels.
That's why WBC has them under the microscope.
Okay, sure. Doesn't make any sense, though. And the guy he's fighting is a no-hoper, which is
makes
this even more, like, just confounding that...
Daniel Martz, 16-5-1 from Clarksburg, West Virginia.
When was the last time we heard of an elite boxer out of West Virginia?
Ooh.
When was that a hotbed?
Let's see.
He's actually going to look it up.
I was trying to find some way to look it up, and I can't.
You can't.
Anything on people on fighters from West Virginia.
The Superfly 2 is happening on February 24th. Srisakit Sarungvisai or Wangik Wexil or whatever he wants to go by will be fighting Juan Francisco Estrada. Not Carlos Quadras as I initially reported. So he's going to fight Estrada. Estrada finally getting his shot at a world title at 115. And if you think about what he did in the lighter weight classes, it's kind of a mystery that he took so long to get a world title when you see guys like Liam Smith getting title shot after title shot.
Estrada, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, he spent a lot of his time chasing after Gonzalez. Like when he was at 112, went to 108 to fight Gonzalez. He got beat, went back to 112 and continued to do work.
Wins two title belts.
Yeah, from Valoria when Valoria was actually good. Then Gonzalez comes up and he gets all the attention. Then he spends that time chasing Gonzalez. He's Estrada not exactly winning anything of note during that time. Like
looked bad too. Estrada did not look good in a couple of the fights that he had, and that's heading into the Quadras fight. That's why I saw that as a close fight. And it at times it was very competitive, but I didn't think it was gonna be such a washout for Estrada because he didn't look good coming into that fight.
He'd been having trouble with hand injuries. So, I mean, excuses, I suppose, but he had been shelved twice for 9 to 10 months over hand injuries and surgeries.
I mean, he looked decent against Marquez, but, like, who doesn't beat up on Marquez?
Hence me saying, like, he looked all right sometimes, and he kept stringing wins together, but, I mean, they weren't anything special. When he moved up to 15, the words were he was moving up for chasing money fights, but it was obvious what that meant, and Gonzalez, he was the money at any of those classes. So,
let's move on because I think the listeners are trying to tune out because it's 115 pounds.
One thing for this card is Hearn confirmed on the 20th, on yesterday that yesterday Saturday, I forget what day it is, but he confirmed that Yafai in a way is not happening because the money was not right for Yafai. So there goes that.
I saw a tweet. I think you might have seen it too. That was pretty funny, pointing out Eddie Hearn's hypocrisy.
Yep.
Where he's saying, like, you know, Joseph Parker's like, I want 50-50 or I want or no, he's
Joseph
saying like
Parker should take the pay cut because it's his career. He should take the lower split because it's a career high payday and etc. But Yafai, he needs more money
to unify. Oh, it's about unifying, yeah. Like,
to unify the titles, and champions deserve bigger cuts. And come on, man.
I think Eddie Hearn, I mean, maybe I'll consider that Hearn can work his magic on 115, but I don't think so. I don't see him able to work his Hearn magic on 115. And you need opportunities like this, this kind of exposure for your division and to put on a show. I mean, think about this. If Gonzalez had come on and won a 12-round decision against Sosa when they first put him on, or was it, it was Sosa, right? I think it was Sosa or Fuentes or something. That first time he fought on HBO, if he wasn't as explosive, nobody would care. If it was a 12-round decision similar to Ray Vargas versus Oscar Negrete, we would have never seen Gonzalez on HBO again.
Right. He made it fun and interesting. Yeah, and Edgar Sosa was the first time on HBO.
And I think he didn't – I think he basically didn't get paid much. He came on and he basically said, I'll take the opportunity and I'm going to make it work.
Yep.
And so – I mean, maybe Eddie thinks that he can do his work, and if he can, fine. It's worked very well on other fighters that are not even as good as Yafai. But I'm not high on him.
I know that Gonzalez was talking about coming back against a guy like Yafai. I mean, the Carlos Quadras rematch is there if he wants to be on Superfly 2. And I can only pray to the boxing gods that Inoue Ancajas gets made. Oh, please.
It'd be a good fight between two very different kind of fighters, too. Like, I'd like to see that fight.
Yeah. I'll be there for Superfly, too. Absolutely.
I'll probably be there too. Joseph Parker and Anthony Joshua, which we just talked about, they're saying that they're going to put it in one of those stadiums. It's going to be announced next week. I'm still not confident in this fight being made.
I think that the stadium they're putting it into, they said is like 100K seating.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
If that's an outdoor stadium, where's it going to be?
Probably in the UK.
Outdoor stadium in December or January, February, whatever. In
Dude,
the UK.
Yeah, they're going to announce a fight for December. December what? It's December 4th. How long all is their right, training all right. camp?
All right, so it's going to be like in February, March in UK, outdoor stadium.
My guess would be it'd be in April. Yeah.
Even still, it's not going to be very pleasant to be outside.
I don't know. James DeGale and Lee Selby are fighting this weekend. Now, we'll get to a preview of their fights a little later, but just so you know, you can stream it free on YouTube. Showtime's gonna stream it.
DeGale, I forgot he was coming on.
What are you, swimming?
No, sorry. It's a protein shake.
Look at this guy. This is this tough guy. Oh, sorry. We'll talk about MMA next, which are protein shakes. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to look up his name. We'll talk about some MMA at the end. Not at the end, before we get onto the previews, because there's some news that is in MMA that if you don't know about, you need to know about if you're a boxing fan, because you're going to hear about a guy very soon. Eliezer Alvarez has signed step aside. He's going to get some step aside money because he is the mandatory for Adonis Stevenson. Now, what does that tell you about a fighter, first of all, that they're taking step aside money? So that's strike one against Eliezer Alvarez. And so what is basically assumed is that Adonis Stevenson will be fighting Badu Jack next. What do you think is a likelihood that this fight takes place?
Stevenson versus Jack. It's politically easy to make. So there's that. Of the other champions, Stevenson, I think, presents the highest payout. And Badu Jack must think that it's pretty low risk, considering Stevenson's age and his inactivity. I think that Jack is willing to take a little bit of a cut to get that to end the Stevenson joke.
Well, I mean, the fight is a fascinating one. You have a guy that is gonna that's close to 40 years old with a deadly one deadly punch, and the rest of his game is pretty above average. And then you have a guy that's above average at everything he does. In addition, has a really high motor, and gets stronger as the fights go on. So this is a much more interesting fight, I think, than the Alvarez fight, first of all.
And he's gotten KO1, hasn't he? Hasn't Jack been stopped in the first round?
Yeah.
Or it was super early.
Yeah,
all right.
First round.
So
Jack threw a lazy jab. That's what happens when you throw lazy jabs, but he's learned his lesson.
Yeah, absolutely. He has improved. It's just one of those things that people are going to call on why this fight is interesting is that Badu Jack has been stopped early and Stevenson has early stopping power.
Yeah, I look forward to that fight. I don't really care for the Alvarez fight. I don't care to see Alvarez fight, period. He's okay, but I definitely think he's boring. Should we talk about the drama of Rigondo losing his title if he loses to Lomachenko? But it's in a division that they're fighting in a division that is not the division that Rigondo holds his title. So therefore, he loses his title. Makes no sense. We're going to talk about that fight later.
Stupid.
I'm not looking forward to talking about that fight because I feel like whatever I say is going to get misinterpreted by fans of either side. And then we get hate mail because of it. So with that said, let's get on to it.
We're on to Lomachenko Rigondo.
Yeah. So live on ESPN this Saturday night, we have Guillermo Rigondo fighting Vasily Lomachenko. Now, let's say that you really like this fight and you really care about this fight and you think this is a great fight. Why would that be?
Why would you think this is a great fight? So Lomachenko, to get the obvious part out of the way, is this guy he's an offensive juggernaut. The guy, he creates a lot of angles. He has high volume, highly accurate output, and he fights very intelligently. So, and that contrasts very perfectly with how Rigondeaux fights, and that is that he's a very sharp counterpuncher, and he uses his opponent's output to his own advantage by being a counterpuncher, right? So that's, if you were to find it interesting, it would be it's because it's the perfect clash of styles. One offensive mastermind versus a defensive wizard. So there's that. One reason that other people find it interesting, this is something that I don't personally subscribe to, but others do, is that they're both very highly rated, highly talented amateurs. They're both two-time Olympic gold medalists, and they both have like 5 million amateur wins or something. And I don't really care for that. So that's one aspect of why people find it so interesting, is the gold medals, the Olympic medals between the two of them. So those are the two reasons why, those are the main reasons why it's an interesting fight.
My guess is that those people, when they want to watch a fight for fun, they don't pull up the Olympic gold medal match. And they don't watch the World Series of Boxing featuring the best amateurs in the world. You know why? Because it's not as fun to watch. That's first of all.
Nobody cares.
Second of all, you didn't mention that. How do you explain that this is a mismatch?
How do you explain that it's a mismatch? Is that the size disparity for one? Lomachenko is fighting. He's been fighting at 130 for a little while now, coming up from 126, and Rigondeaux fights at 122. So there's a 2 weight class difference. Rigondeaux, he's not exactly a big guy for 122 either. So he's definitely smaller. He's definitely older. I think he's at least 10 years older than Lomachenko is.
At least.
Yeah. He's old.
We don't
old.
Know for sure.
Right. I mean, we don't know how old Ortiz is. He claims he's like 45, but really he's probably 60 or something.
First of all, Rigondeaux is 37 years old, so he could be 40.
Right.
At 122. Now moving up. Putting on 8 pounds to fight a guy who's very comfortable at 130. Lomachenko is 5'6". He's a decent sized guy. You know what was really funny is before Lomachenko became pro, I had been researching him, and with amateurs, there's not a lot of information out there. Like, go look up whatever you can on Lázaro Álvarez. Like, let me know what you find. But there was a rumor that Lomachenko had the craziest reach that you had ever seen, and so again, before he turned pro, there was no way to confirm this. I looked around, maybe there was, but I couldn't find it. And I looked, like, the rumor was that his reach was like 74 inches, which would put his reach at even longer than Floyd's, and Floyd's got a few inches on him. And there was like this theory, like, this is why Lomachenko's so good and why he would be so deadly as a pro, is because of his ungodly reach. And then he turns pro and we see him fight, and they record his reach at like 65 inches.
Rigondeaux has a longer reach than him,
which is like really short. And it's like, wow, this is, I can't believe people like create these weird narratives. And for what? What was the point of making up some lie? I mean, I guess that's what it appeared to them, but like, as an amateur, it didn't appear to me that Rigondeaux or Lomachenko had such a long reach. Maybe it's because of the gloves, but he's a much bigger guy. He's going to have a ton of functional weight on Rigondeaux. And the other thing is that Lomachenko's style is all wrong for a guy who's at a size disadvantage. Now, if they were closer in size and they're fighting at 126, I'd feel more comfortable about this fight. But when you have a guy who's much bigger and relies on activity, because however you want to describe Lomachenko, the best way to describe him is he's an activity fighter. He throws a lot of punches. That guy is going to overwhelm Rigondeaux, and it's going to be up to Rigondeaux to slow the pace down. And I'm pretty sure he will slow the pace a bit, but not enough. Not enough to basically do what he wants to do.
Yeah, him slowing the pace down is going to be a question of whether his power carries to 130. As I was saying earlier in the episode, Rigondeaux, he literally breaks people's faces at 122 with one punch, but 122 to 130, that's a big jump. To not have any fights in between, to be as inactive as Rigondeaux is, so you have no fights in between to gauge whether or not your power is carrying up with you as you put on weight, is he going to even have the power to keep Lomachenko, to gain Lomachenko's respect? Because if he doesn't, and he probably won't, Lomachenko's not going to slow down.
No, so, I mean, we'll know very early, like probably by the second round, maybe even the first, how this fight's going to wind up going. And Rigondeaux hasn't fought like rounds in over two years. He fought two rounds against Jazza Dickens and then broke his face. And then he fought one round against Moises Flores, who then quit. So, like, what are you supposed to expect out of this fight? It's not a good fight.
And all the smart money's on Lomachenko.
And I don't care what people say. Oh, these guys are so skilled. At some point, it's like Andre Ward is really skilled. You cannot deny that. But at some point, Anthony Joshua is just going to knock him out. Same thing, you know, Floyd Mayweather, he's really skilled. Well, it's not going to work against Sergey Kovalev. At some point, the size is going to take over. So I'm not one bit excited in this fight. The Chris Diaz versus Bryant Cruz is not a very entertaining... I mean, Diaz is on his way up, no doubt about that. And there are a lot of reasons why you should be high on Chris Diaz. The guy can box. He doesn't have the best defense, but he can box. And a guy like Bryant Cruz is a good stepping stone for him at this point. They're doing the right thing. If I was them, I would not rush Diaz. He's still 23. He's Puerto Rican, and you know that if you can create a Puerto Rican star, those guys are bankable for years. So
the seat is open.
Yeah.
The throne is open.
Is the seat open right now? Let me think.
Is there another
Puerto Rican stars right now? Yeah. Machado is like their guy, I guess, at the moment.
Let's see.
That's not good, but, you know.
If Pedraza can get on the comeback trail.
Oh, no. You don't get beat up like that. And Verdejo was supposed to be the guy. We're still waiting. It's Machado right now, which is not good. Not a very good state.
Yeah, it's not saying much.
Of things for Puerto Rico. Bryant Jennings returning in an 8-round fight against Don Haynesworth. That's cool. Michael Conlan will fight against Luis Molina. Good for him. His opponent's 7-3-1. Shakur Stevenson fighting Oscar Mendoza, 4-2. Like, pretty pedestrian stuff. Stuff you expect.
Yeah, they're still coming up.
Yeah, from guys who are, you know, they're taking it slow with these guys. And that'll be the top-ranked card. But not to be outdone. Because, you know, this is boxing. And if one, you know, if somebody's putting on a show, someone else needs to do that too. So, over in California, HBO is basically counter-programming with Orlando Salido. Is that this weekend? Yeah, it is.
It is.
I was looking in California, but it's not in California. It's in Vegas. We'll get to that one a little later. Orlando Salido is going to fight Mickey Roman. Like, this is the modern day Gotti versus Ward. How is it not?
I couldn't tell you. I'm not really that familiar with Miguel Roman, to be honest with you, but from everything that I hear about him, he's cut from the same cloth as the Salido, Francisco Vargas, and Miguel Burchelt. Like, he's cut from that same cloth, and it's going to be fireworks. That's all I can tell you about it.
I mean, he had that fight with Takashi Miura that was just absolutely brutal. Oh, I think we were in Vegas that weekend. That was the same weekend as Santa Cruz and Frampton.
Yeah, that Roman Miura fight, that was in California though.
Yeah. And then so that's the headliner. That should be an absolute war if you like punching in the face. And it's
people
the perfect
who block
counter
with their faces.
For Lomachenko versus Rigondeaux. You're going to have a fight that is on paper supposed to be like this technical masterpiece, and then you have Salido versus Roman.
Someone's going to die.
And then on the undercard, you have Tevin Farmer making his HBO debut against Kenichi Ogawa, which is like, first of all, where did Tevin Farmer come from?
This guy, I was going to ask you.
He talked himself into this position as like basically being somebody that everybody's talking about as a top prospect, but the dude's got four losses.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where this all comes from. I've been watching his come up in a way. I've been watching his come up on like Instagram and on social media pretty much, where, it, as you put it, he says everyone's talking about him. Everyone's talking about him because he says everyone's talking about him. And it becomes this like self-sustaining cycle. And, you know, all the posts about Tevin Farmer are, this is the one everyone's talking about.
I think I said this on the mailbag, but I'm not sure where the hype for Tevin Farmer comes from. The guy has no punching power. His last fight was a guy with seven wins. The best one of his career is against Ivan Redkak, who with one loss was already shot. Hold on. So I'm not sure what to think of Tevin Farmer. Like, the guy, I don't get it. I mean, he beat him after Redkak drew with Luis Cruz in a fight where Cruz should have gotten the win. So, like, Tevin Farmer's win, his best win over Ivan Redkak, like, no good.
Yeah, he's got a thin resume. But, I mean, he's talking himself into a fight with Gervonta Davis. Just yeah. By poking at his pride.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what to think of this fight other than probably Farmer wins. It's I would bet on the over. And then we have Francisco Vargas fighting Stephen Smith.
Of the Fighting Smith Brothers, yes?
Yeah, of the Fighting Smith Brothers.
A look at his resume does not look good. Every time this kid has stepped up, he's gotten bopped. Jason yeah. Sosa gave him the L. Oof. Pedraza gave him. Selby stopped him. So if that doesn't tell you what you need to know about him going into this, pray for Stephen Smith.
Well, but that's assuming that Francisco Vargas is the same guy who, you know.
Fair. Fair point.
Who did that's not. Get nearly beat by Mira and Burchelt and
Drew with Salido.
And Salido. You know, he's
just
had...
what I mean to say is that if Vargas has not fallen off the cliff, which when you fight in that style it's pretty easy. But if he's still as good as he ever was, then Smith has his work cut out for him, and he's gonna have to have that work rate, stay mobile. Stay away from him. Do not get close to this guy because he's going to put your lights out.
Yep. And then we have the HBO Latino card. Dennis Shafikov versus Rene Alvarado. This is basically like Shafikov. He needs this one bad. And Alvarado is a guy that Shafikov should beat him. Jesus Christ, I'm just remembering that those 121-08 cards against Robert Easter Jr. Yeah, so
that's where I saw Shafikov.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got worked.
You know, Shafikov was supposed to be good, and Gleb hyped him up, and then he was actually doing really well for himself after losing to Miguel Vasquez. And then he took the loss to Barthelemy, but like that was a fair and square loss. And then he knocks out Jamal Herring, beats Richard Comey.
Man, Herring. I think that was one of Herring's step ups, wasn't it?
That was his step up.
Yeah, that was his step up.
I know you have feelings for Herring because of yeah, my similar dude, backgrounds.
Yeah, my dude Herring, man.
Yeah, well, too bad.
Sad times.
Yeah, so those anyway, are the fights this weekend.
It's a stacked weekend. For being so slim this weekend, it's like they're making it up for us by making you pick and choose what you're going to watch.
Which is great. That's what boxing fans love. Boxing fans love to
competing
have
cards.
Lots of options all at the same time. And you know, the good thing is that next Saturday
we got some early cards too. Though we got the UK cards earlier in the day.
Oh, actually I forgot to talk about those. I was like so eager to just kind of mention next week. In the daytime I should have went first, but I just went right into the Lomachenko card. James DeGale is going to fight Caleb Truax in a return fight. Do you think DeGale is going to take his teeth out before he puts his mouthpiece in?
I hope for his sake he does. We don't need any more pictures of Chunky putting his open mouth up against the camera.
Does James DeGale have the least, like the most underwhelming physique of any world level fighter?
Underwhelming physique of a world level fighter. I think I'd put Tony Bellew higher.
That we're saying world level.
Oh, shots fired. World level.
I think he does. Like, he just never looks like he's shredded out. Like, he's in really great shape.
Like, maybe he's leaving himself room to, I don't know, cut down, I guess, if he needs to. I don't know. Just speculating. I have no idea.
I mean, I don't know who he would be avoiding at 168. I think 168 right now, what appeared to be a division that was going to be stacked, is really kind of underwhelming, I think, just like his physique. And what is up with the division? Four of the top five guys are British. Then there's two Americans, and then there's three Germans, and that's it. One Mexican and Gilberto Ramirez. I mean, according to BoxRec, at least. David
right,
Benavidez
this is
should
the
be
Box
in the top 10 as well.
Top 10.
But yeah, as far as the fight with Truax, I mean, here's the deal with Truax is that he's a domestic American fighter. He's going to get a world title shot here, and that's great. And Truax, you know, it's his first, second opportunity at a title. I forgot he fought Danny Jacobs. But Truax is not on this level. He's decent and he can go some rounds. But I don't know. Anthony Durrell stopped him in one round. Truax is a career 160-pound fighter. So that kind of gives you a hint of how this might go. And he also lost to Jermaine Taylor in 2012. You know, Jermaine Taylor at the time was like 33 years old. You know, that's like not the best.
I'm not too familiar with Truax, but just looking at his resume, the only L's that he has are from the only names that I recognize. So I can reasonably expect that James DeGale is going to give him the work. I'm not sure if I would give it a stoppage in one like Durrell pulled, just because James DeGale, I don't know if I'd call him the biggest puncher, but he'd probably piece him up for a couple of rounds before the ref gives it a mercy stoppage.
All right, well, let me ask you this question, okay? Lee Selby's going to fight a guy called Eduardo Ramirez. Why is his nickname Zurdito?
Zurdo is what you call a lefty. So Zurdito is like a small lefty. Like when you add the suffix ito to something, it's like it's a small
I know
or
that.
Little thing. So yeah.
I mean, yeah, for the people who don't know, though.
So yeah, so for people who are not familiar, like Gilberto Ramirez, his nickname is Zurdo. So they just call him Lefty. It's real creative, I know, but that's what Ramirez's nickname is. So let's see. The thing about this fight with Selby is that, let's see, Ramirez is, according to BoxRec, he's ranked 27th. And to be honest with you, Lee Selby, since he won his title against Gradovich back, what, almost 2.5 years now, he just really hasn't done anything worthwhile. And it's really disappointing that we have so much talent at 126. And here's Selby sitting with a title and he's not doing anything with it. It's something that I mentioned in, I've been prepping my year-end roundup, just a total rundown of every division, who's had good years, bad years, who had a good year, bad year, etc. And Lee Selby, even though he was the most active, this will be his third fight of the year. Just these guys that he's fighting, just they're not worth anything. So at what point do we stop when do we stop caring about, you know, beating up these guys, getting pointless UDs over people who don't matter? When do we stop paying attention to this guy?
My question is why? Why are they putting him in with these guys?
Good. Your guess is as good as mine. Like everyone's available. It's not like these guys, like the other top names, it's not like they're doing something. Gary Russell, man, what a slacker. Like he admittedly only fights once a year because that's the bare minimum that's expected of him to keep his title by his own admission. Like what is he doing right now? He hasn't fought in 7 months. and doing, and what is he doing with his time? Like, it's not like he can't unify his title, but he just chooses not to. Same with well, Santa Cruz, I guess, and Mares and Frampton, sure, they fought recently, but
they
even
all
still
have legitimately big names that they can justify, like, I'm holding out because I need to fight somebody with a name,
so they can say, pay me. If Shelby wants this work, then pay me. But what position does Gary Russell have to be saying something like that? Your laugh says it all. He has none. So what is Frank Warren doing not trying to get a Gary Russell in so that they can unify?
Gary Russell's an enigma, first of all. Like, I don't get that guy one bit. And then Lee Selby, I think that they legitimately know that Selby can't hang with these guys. And that's why they're putting him in. Like, just look at his resume.
Keeping him busy until they age off?
Yeah, well, even when he won a world title, he was going against one of the weaker title holders. He fights Fernando Montiel, who was done already. And just think, Jorge Lara, who is currently sitting on the bottom half of the top 10 on most rankings, higher on mine.
Yeah, I was going to say,
destroyed Montiel in one round. Lee Selby went through 12 tough, hard-fought rounds. I mean, that says something. That says something about Lee Selby. And then he fights Eric Hunter, gets dropped, and now he's got, he keeps fighting, like, just weaker and weaker opposition. And now this guy, Eduardo Ramirez, you know, he's 23 years old, or 24, unknown to anyone. I mean, well, basically, he's the guy that actually everyone thought should have gotten the win against Ledwan Barthelemy. I thought it was a pretty close fight. Could have went either way. You just recently fought, like, in September. I'm sure you all know and you remember exactly the card I'm mentioning because you guys all watch PBC on FS1. But if you don't,
Is it the 97-93 card?
Barthelemy got the 97-93 card.
Yeah.
I think there were some that were a little unhappy about that card, but I thought it was a fight that you could have scored it anyway. It was close. Ramirez,
126 is a disappointment. What a disappointment featherweight is.
I would say it's a disappointment in the fighters and the choices that they make, but not in the talent.
No, yeah, that's what I mean to say, is that there's so many good names there that could be marquee fights. They could be, but they're holding out for the big money, I guess. But I guess they value their weight class a little more than pretty much anyone else does.
Well, that's the fights. You can watch it. Both of those fights are going to be streamed on YouTube. So they air on BT Sport in the UK, but here in America, Showtime is going to air them on TV, I believe, and on YouTube. So nobody has any excuse to not have watched this fight. And, you know, I think for what it's worth, and it's not worth much, but the only really entertaining fight we're going to get on Saturday is a Salido fight. Possibly the Shafi Cup fight, but I don't think any of the other fights are going to be that entertaining. If you think that you're going to get some sort of fight of the year candidate in Rigondeaux and Lomachenko, you're going to be a little disappointed. That's just my opinion.
Nah, that's not going to be the type of fight that anybody really wants to watch. It's going to be one of those chess match, super tactical. Like, they're going to be like twitching at each other for most of the rounds before they really commit to anything.
Remember when Lara versus Trout got signed? Everyone was, well, that was a super high skill fight, but it turned out to be nearly unwatchable because both guys were just posturing the whole time, trying to find a setup, laying traps for the
Monroe
trap
Saunders.
The other trap was getting sent. Monroe Saunders, like, no, that's
it's a lower skill, but
that, no, that's
a lower skill,
not very skilled thing. That's called, we think we're skilled, but we don't have the physical assets to fulfill.
I was trying to segue.
Plans that we have. What are you trying to segue into?
You wanted to talk about Saunders Lemieux.
I don't really want to talk about that fight. We'll say that
you
for
were
next
trying
week.
To. Oh, okay, you were trying
I just
to earlier.
To mention that was going to happen next week, and then we're going to talk about the Hebrew Hammer again, and his completely star-making fight that is going to be against Eve Ulysses Jr., even though Ulysses Jr. just took his first L of his career in his last fight. But don't worry about that. He only has one loss. And somebody pointed out hilariously in the Slack that in the UK, they announce fighters with one loss, or I don't know if it's just one loss, but they announce fighters with losses as formerly undefeated.
Formerly undefeated.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Where's Kell Brook? He's from Sheffield, right?
Yeah.
Out of Sheffield, England, the formerly undefeated, former IBF welterweight champion. Yeah, that's how they do it. So
I know for for Porter Thurman, they were calling Porter once beaten.
Yeah, well, that makes sense because he got beat once, and he did get beat by a guy who is now formerly undefeated.
Cultural differences, I guess.
So here's a couple of announcements. One, follow us on all social media things. We're wrapping it up now. Instagram, Twitter. We talk a lot of trash. We put a lot of videos up like instantly. I'm talking like Kodo gets blocked in the second and I'll post it. I mean, I won't post it. We will find a video link and share it with you within a couple of rounds. Even quicker if I'm not paying attention that closely to the fight, which is sometimes for the UK fights, I can get that stuff up really quick.
On the fly.
And we have Twitter. We have cool video clips also on Instagram. And then if you want to play us in Fight Night Champion, you're going to need to get in the chat first. And to get in the chat, you're going to need to send me your email. And you send me your email, then we can talk. And we'll set you up to fight somebody in Fight Night Champion if you're new to it. And it's PlayStation 3. If you're on Xbox, just go sell your Xbox. Or better yet,
PlayStation.
Throw it out the window and go get a PlayStation, okay? We do not play Xbox. Xbox is for children. Get yourself a PlayStation. Get Fight Night Champion. It's free to play online, so you don't got to worry about PlayStation Plus, okay? And if you're not that good, if you've never played before, not a problem. You let me know. I'll coach
you up.
We'll
work you up the ranks. We'll work you up the ranks.
Yep. Ryan just started today, got knocked out twice. Both times got knocked out in the second round. He doesn't know what he's doing, but he's going to get better. I'm going to keep giving him advice. And before you know it, he's going to get knocked out in six rounds instead of two.
Man, I don't play consoles usually, but you guys got me thinking about going picking up a PS3.
What do you have to lose?
Nothing. I'm probably going to go pick one up.
Yeah, you have nothing to lose. You go get a console, I'll knock you out too.
Except my dignity, bro. Except my dignity.
Well, it's better losing your dignity than your virginity, but that's a story for another day.
What was that UFC news you had?
Oh, so basically in the UFC card, like there's this fighter, I'm probably going to get it wrong, but he's African or of African descent, and like he like has this really inspirational story, okay? So he's got this inspirational story, and now he's fought his way into basically title contention. He's fighting the number one rated guy. And he knocked him out with the first punch he landed.
Nice.
His last name, I don't know what his full name is. Let me see if he's written it on two. His name is Francis Ngannou. And this dude, he's a monster. Like if you look at him, just a pure monster. He's got that Anthony Joshua look. Just a monster.
Holy cow. I'm seeing a picture of Miguel Cotto's bicep. Holy crap. That thing is like he has his arm fully extended and it's just balled up at the top. That's bad.
He wears his balls on his sleeve, maybe. But if you haven't seen the knockout from this weekend, this fight is like 20 seconds long. He lands a left uppercut that it just rocks that, like the guy goes stiff immediately. And so the news is basically if this guy keeps winning, we are going to see him versus Joshua. That's the next thing. Joshua versus Ngannou. I think that's how you say his name. Or Wilder, maybe. But this guy's basically, he's basically going to be the next UFC guy to cross over. That's the news. That's it. No other reason to listen or watch UFC stuff. I just told you what to expect. Okay? And I thank you for listening to the podcast. We will be back next week. Mailbag, probably the week before Christmas. So what would that be, like the 20th or so? I would say around the 20th.
That uppercut was nasty.
Yeah, you see, that was... That's
that
filthy.
Was nasty.
And just so you know, if you want to get hit with shots like that, come play me in UFC Online. UFC 2, I'll beat you in UFC 2. I'll beat you in Fight Night. You can't beat me. Okay? If you're listening to this right now, let me know. Message me. I'll tell you my PSN name. We can play any game you want, but you got to have PlayStation.
Bring it.
Leo, go get yourself a console. You can get beat too.
I need some coaching.
They call me. They all day long in the chat. They know who's Floyd. Me. I'm Floyd. Okay, and they're all nothing but losers. So
I'm sure they'll appreciate hearing this.
So they probably don't even listen. At least not this far into the podcast. they just, I mean, maybe at the beginning they probably listen because they're like, "Ooh, he's talking about us in our chat, and he's talking about us streaming fights. Let me keep listening. Maybe he'll mention us again." And now you know, I mentioned you. You're a loser.
Hey, dude, can we get a tweet beat this week to close it out?
Tweet is working on a Christmas song, and I actually wrote him a verse for the song, and he only liked one of my lines, which I will not share because it was like probably the worst line I wrote. You know, I took on the premise, it's a Christmas theme, that I'm Santa and I'm coming down the chimney, but I'm only here for one thing, and I got a big Christmas tree, and I'm trying to bang my bulbs.
Swiggity swooty.
And he only liked a line where I used I used roast beef in a line.
Yikes.
And so he's trying to fit that into the verse that he's working on. So yeah, probably when he's done with that, we'll put it on. But this week, I don't know if we'll have a tweet beat. I had an idea for what music I wanted for this episode, and since you've already listened to the podcast, you already know what it is. So thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.